I'm Jessie Hosmer.
And I'm Dawn Hosmer, and this is Unravel the Binding,
a mother-daughter book club podcast where we read books with you.
Woohoo! It's only taken us 6 books to get that down.
Yeah, and I still, right before we start, I'm like, hi, I'm just, I have to remember, like, that's how we start. I'm like, okay.
It's fine. Be proud of us, guys. Because, you know, we talked briefly before we started this. So our overall answer for how are you doing it is not good. So that's at least my answer. Is it yours as well?
Yeah, I was going to go with not good, terrible, tired. You know, it's been that kind of week. And I feel like that plays into why we've just been so late with our episodes recently. I just want to apologize to you guys. I say that usually my life is at a constant state of chaos, but these last couple weeks have just been even more chaos than the normal chaos. So I just want to apologize. I really appreciate you guys, or we really appreciate you guys sticking in there and keeping us on it and keeping us reading. I really appreciate you guys being here, but we are so sorry.
Yes, and I did a brief video on social media. Like, Jessie's life is always crazy, so that's just like her standard operating level. But my last couple weeks has been insane as well, so... Yeah, just making our time work together has not gone too well. But we're here now, and we're happy to finally get to talk about the second half of this book, because it was a good one. So let's dive into the second half of The Devil You Know by Terry Tyler.
Perfect. So I do think it was helpful that there were, like, was these parts.
Oh,
yeah. Like, it was part one, part two, and then I think there's a little part three, but... I liked that part of it. So where we jump in is chapter 16. It's labeled Sarah. This chapter, I think, was so real. Like, the real struggle that addicts have. And... I mean, all of the stories we've heard of all these victims have been heartbreaking, but this one, like, really broke my heart. It's like, she was wanting to get out of her lifestyle, so she was a prostitute and doing drugs, and she just talked about how she wanted all these things, but she just needed, like, the one more night, one more hit, one more, and then this terrible thing happened to her, and...
Again, I thought this was a brilliant chapter for Terry Tyler to put into the book. Like, she's had several of those throughout the first half where we're just like, oh, that was really smart writing. But I really appreciated this one too, because I think it's very easy as an outsider to judge people's life choices and if they're doing things that we don't approve of. But this shows you what it's like to be in the addict or sex worker's brain and trying to break free. And this chapter brought back so many memories of real life people I met when I was a counselor in a women's residential treatment center, because this story was so much like that. Like, you had it all. You had this great life. You had a home and things you loved, and just slowly losing them one by one. And it brought many people's faces and stories to my mind.
Yeah, I think a lot of people make assumptions about people in this situation. And so, I don't know, I think it was a very real chapter. It was very insightful. That's a word.
Yes. Right? Like, yes, that's a word.
I was like, I know insight is a word, but not full.
Sarah, she's convinced herself this is her last night of sex work. She's going to call it a night after this one last customer and then check herself into treatment. And we realize at the end of the chapter, it's the Linford Strangler that she's with.
And that was another thing that I feel like this chapter shows is how it takes so many coincidences and events that just happen to fall into place. She at first wasn't even going to go out tonight. And mm-hmm. then she's like, well, I'm just going to head home. And then this car came up. You know, there was like one more night, one more thing. And it was like, it just worked out so much. I don't want to say perfectly because it's not like a good perfectly. But like so many things had to happen in a specific order for this to happen. And I feel like sometimes that's crazy to think of. It's like there was like so many choices that like went into like this event. It just blows my mind.
And how random it all is. Like, if she had changed one of those choices, he would have picked up somebody else. And then that could have resulted in a whole different outcome. So, yeah, it's crazy to think about.
So, moving on to chapter 17. We're back with Juliet, the wife of Paul Tully. This chapter, I was getting frustrated with.
Me too. With Juliet. Like, yes. Because she starts off like, Paul's not the strangler because he doesn't own that kind of hat. And I do all of his laundry and shopping. And I'm like, how hard is it to hide a hat? Like, is he a real idiot that he couldn't go buy his own hat? Because I think he probably could.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I was like, I mean, I give her props. She's like, I do all of his laundry. I know everything he owns. Maybe, but
yeah,
it's not like he's a very open person. Like, it's not that, yeah, you're like you said. I was like, what if he just left his hat in his car the whole time? Like, so yeah, I feel like her whole justification, well, he's not the strangler because of this hat, is just ludicrous. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other reason I got frustrated with her, but I think that it was really, again, smart writing and realistic writing on Terry Tyler's part, is her talking about the three times that, you know, that things have been going good. They had a good vacation, but he'd become a little bit angry with her three times. And two of those times she deserved it. And like, then her mentioning the little things she did to get his wrath. Like, she forgot wine on a picnic. She accidentally locked them out of their vacation spot. The third time didn't count because he'd been drinking. And I feel like so many women in domestic violence situations justify and minimize. It's a survival technique. And mm-hmm. I think that Terry did a very good job of showing how it works in women's minds that do stay, how they minimize the abuse.
Yeah, and I think what frustrated me in this chapter was she was taking steps to better herself by reading this, is it called like a self-improvement? I'm thinking of like a home improvement. And I'm like, is this a self-improvement book?
Like a self-help.
Oh, that's
self-improvement.
Yeah. Like a home improvement. So I was like, that is great. I was really hoping that would, you know, change her perspective of it. Or her to like recognize what's actually going on. But when she kept saying she's going to reclaim her life, I feel like she took that book and like altered her perspective of her life. Like, saw, you know, was minimizing everything and saying things are her fault. And it's like, you know, that wasn't the point of the book. The point of the book was for you to take hold of your life. And instead, like, I feel like she gave more of it away. And so that was kind of frustrating because I was like so excited. Yeah. She had this book and then like it just didn't hit her the same way I thought it would.
Yeah, it was like it helped her put on rose-colored glasses to see her life differently, but not realistically.
Yeah.
And then I also got frustrated because they were talking about the girlfriend of Sam's that claimed he'd been violent towards her during an argument. And like, it was just kind of like, justified, swept under the rug, excuses made for it. And I'm like, that's how men turn out to be like Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Abusive, as it's, you just make excuses and...
Yeah, and what was frustrating there, like, obviously, you know, the dad's gonna not, you know, not really care what he says. But the, you know, Juliet believes him. After this whole book, or her chapters, she continually compares her sons to Paul and, like, the monsters they will become. And it's just frustrating, like, here is a little bit of a monster coming out, and you're just kind of like, let it go. Like, wash it by. Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, this is such a learning point for that kid. If they would have come down on him and actually taken care of the situation appropriately, maybe Sam won't turn out to be like Paul later in life.
Exactly. Exactly. Her denial. She's a master at denial. So she did get a brochure, to try to better herself. She got a brochure from Linford College and started looking at different courses she could take and was talking about jewelry making. But even in that, she's thinking she wants Paul to be proud of her. And I'm like, no, you need to be proud of you, not Paul. So in the process of doing that, she's filling out the application, figures out her credit card has been expired or has expired. So she has to get the checkbook out of Paul's office, which she talks about his office like it's a sacred private space she's not allowed to go into. And I'm just like, I can't imagine living like that.
Well, that's not even the room she's 100% not allowed to go into. Like, this is just one of his spaces that I can't touch anything. Even he expects me to clean it, but I can't screw up anything. And I'm like, all right, no.
Yeah.
So when she's in there, she finds, I believe, like a letter from the police asking just to come in to answer some questions. And then, you know, we kind of get into this whole... back to, well, he's definitely the strangler. And it's just like, you're either she's so far left or so far right. Like, she, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was proud of her because for once she confronted him and said, look, I found that letter. Why have you been in that area? And he said he was getting a cheeseburger, and I just made a note, liar. Like, you're not going to go all the way to the other side, bad side of town, to get a cheeseburger.
Yes. Though my mind, like, if someone would question me, especially when I was out in LA, like, why were you gone for 2 hours? And I was waiting in line for a cheeseburger. In-N-Out was, like, a two-hour-long wait, and I waited in it. So I'm like, certain things I'm like, yeah, I could see this being like somebody questioning me. Like, why were you in that bad area? Well, I live in that bad area. Why are you going 3 hours? I was literally in line for a cheeseburger.
Isn't it nice to not be there anymore?
Yes, I've been craving an In-N-Out burger, like, ugh, so much. Anywho, enough about food.
Juliet, like, when she's talking to him, you know, he says the police did question him, but that he wouldn't give a DNA sample if they asked for it. And Juliet says, well, why wouldn't you if you haven't done anything? Well, of course, that pisses him off that she says, if you didn't do anything.
Yeah. And he just goes, that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back, just pushed him over the edge. He goes off on her. I'm pretty sure he pushes her over and leaves. Which, just the whole time, like, fuck him. He just pisses me off.
Yeah.
The next day or later on, she's watching TV and they come in with some news about the next murder. Oh, no, one that got away. Mm-hmm. Was it Sarah that got away?
That's what I put Sarah question mark. I think it was Sarah
that yeah, got it away. Was. It was. I see it right here.
Which I was happy to hear.
Yes.
She stabbed him in the groin with her heel and then ran away. So the police say that the man in question might have bruises on his upper body, and they release a new picture of the suspect, and Julia's like, oh my gosh, it looks just like Paul. And she's like, he was out late the night of the attack. So she rifles through all of his things and looking for some kind of evidence. And I did find it interesting. At some point, she said she needed to talk to Laura about this, and because she always knew the right thing to say, and she'd close her eyes and let Laura do all the talking. And I found that a little odd at that point.
Yeah, my brain was like, more, this is what Laura would say. You know, like, you're in a situation, you're like, okay, what would, I don't know, what would my mom say in this situation? Like, the advice right. part of it. You'd say, get your gun out and clear the barn. So
just like on CSI or
all
Criminal
them, really.
Minds.
So she decides that she's gonna tell Laura everything, and Laura will make the right decision.
Yes. So then we go to chapter 18, and we're back to Maisie. And Maisie is at school. At the end of the school day, and her friend Saffron, which I love all these kids' names.
I know, right?
Her friend Saffron is kind of hesitant to tell her, but then she finally spits out that she heard her mom talking and saying that she thinks Gary might be the Linford Strangler.
Well, it wasn't like worded exactly like that. She was just kind of like questioning how everything was working out, and then was like, it could be Gary. I don't know. Like, I feel like she was more of like, she could have been listening. Well, it could be Gary. It could be Tom. Like, I felt it was more like a that kind of thing. She didn't give other names, but I was like, she's like, oh, you know, I was talking to Gary and like, it could be him. I don't think she's like, it's definitely him.
Well, because she worked at the job center, which I'm assuming is like an unemployment center here.
Yeah.
And she had the picture of the strangler, the eFit picture, minimized on the screen when Gary came in, and she kept looking back and forth between Gary and the picture, and she's thinking, okay, well, that looks like him.
Which should be like, in all of these stories, they're like, that picture is definitely so and so. Can we get all these guys in a lineup together? Like, I want to see exactly. how similar they actually look.
Exactly.
I mean, you can make those pictures look, you know, it can look like a lot of people. And if they don't look alike. But I'd be interested to see, like, the movie cover of this with all of them in a lineup just to see how like, different they look.
Because sometimes, like, even, like, if you're watching true crime shows, like, when they finally arrest someone, you can say, oh my gosh, that composite sketch looks exactly like the killer. And other times you're like, there's no resemblance there at all.
Yeah. So during this whole thing, like, Maisie gets a little upset and angry at Saf. But, you know, I get why it. Maisie's angry, just kind of, I think, situational, not like mad at actually Saf for saying it. But I also think it gives Maisie a little validation. Like, she's been thinking all these things, and I don't think she had said anything to Saf at all yet. You know, she'd been talking to her other friend, Beth. I think her name is Beth.
Yes, it is.
So I feel like this definitely, like, helped Maisie, like, a little bit have more confidence in, like, what she's feeling. So I thought that part of it was good.
But she's so, I like that she's, you know, worried about her mom. Like, she's like, okay, it's one thing for me to think this and suspect it, but I can't let these rumors get back to my mom because that's going to destroy her. And so she decides, because the night the last girl, Sarah, got away, Gary hadn't been home on Friday night and didn't come home till early Saturday morning. And her mom had said he was off with his other woman, Charlotte. So Maisie's like, I'm going to get her number and call her. And I'm like, yeah. I love Maisie.
That's so ballsy. Like, yes, I was like, is. Holy crap.
So she calls Charlotte, and Charlotte, oh, I did not like her at all and how she handled things, but it made me really suspicious about Gary because some of the responses Charlotte gave were like, well, you ask him whose girlfriend he think or whose boyfriend he thinks he is. And just, it made me realize Gary was like playing both of these women a little bit.
Yeah. But still, like, at this point, I'm like, he's a shitty guy. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know, she gave him, like, yeah, he was here on Friday. And so, like, I still wasn't feeling any more suspicious of him, like, as the suspicious of a suspect, as being the murderer. Yeah. I was like, he's definitely a dick, but I was like, I don't think she got anything from it for the big picture stuff.
No. I was proud of her for making that phone call because somebody needed to. So she decides to talk to Kate / Mrs. Brownlow, who I really, really like her mm-hmm. as well. And she kind of unloads all of this on Mrs. Brownlow. And so Kate mentions, like, hey, I had a boyfriend once I didn't trust, and I checked the mileage on his car. And so Maisie's like, huh, how do I do that? Like, tell me all the information. And
which I think it was a great thing to do. But as a, like, do I think it was the right thing to tell a teenager to do to check to see if her dad was a murderer? Like, we're suspecting him of murder. Let's go break into his car. And this, and a teacher is telling her to do this. And it's just like,
yeah,
I love it, but I'm like, I don't know if, like, you were the right person to tell her. Like, it's just a very odd situation.
Or, like, maybe go to the police with this information. Yeah. But I also understand, like, you know, as a teacher with these teenage students, I'm sure that you can't just run to the police every time somebody says something about their parents. So maybe, you know, part of her was like, well, you know, who knows if there's any truth to this or if she just doesn't like Gary.
But then I don't know that, well, he didn't drive as far as he said he did. So let's go to the police. Or he must be the murderer. It's like, well, that's not more evidence. Like, you're still taking the teenager's word on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Very interesting process.
We didn't find that out till later, though.
Well, I reworded it.
Okay.
All right.
So then we go back to chapter 19, which is Dorothy. Orlando's still acting odd and lying and keeping things from her. And she's looking through old photos and just reminiscing and decides to put his laundry away.
Yes. And as she's doing that, she finds in his sock drawer, I think, it's a little box and it's locked. And she kind of goes back and forth. She's like, well, if it's locked, it's private, you know, and that, you know, they're big on respect of privacy. But she can't help herself not to unlock it. And she finds, I want to say, a couple rings, a tube of lipstick, a couple pairs of tights, a comb, a couple other items. Makeup. Primarily used by women. Mm-hmm. And she immediately is starting to think that these are trophies. And I'm not going to lie, I did too.
Oh, so did I. I'm like, yep, he's the killer.
Yeah, and I wrote, oh shit, Def Orlando.
And I appreciate her hesitation about, you know, honoring his privacy and all this. But this is just to let all of my adult children know. If I suspect you're a murderer and I find a locked box, I'm going to look in the box.
Yeah, like, I feel like privacy goes out the window when we're contemplating you being a serial killer. Like,
exactly. So, it's on record, it's recorded and out in the universe. Don't keep your trophies in my house.
So she finds all these things, she gets so upset, and she, like, passes out in his bed. And he comes home, wakes her up, and then asks if she wants food. Go get some fish and chips. And he leaves. And that's when she notices the box is back to being put together, locked up. And so it's like, I wrote down, I don't know if you guys watch Friends, but like the one where they know we know they know we know. So like... He knows, she knows, he knows, she knows something. Yeah. I don't know why my brain went there. But, so I was honestly, I was like, well, he's definitely the killer, and so why didn't he kill her? Like, I'm surprised he didn't kill his mom for finding out a secret. So it was kind of like, oh no, was he going to come back and kill her or disappear into the night?
And when she sees him walk out the door to the car, he pulls a black hat from his pocket. And I'm just like, Orlando is the killer.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see if we're right or wrong. Usually wrong.
Okay, so then chapter 20, we're with Steve. And I believe Dan is trying to get Steve to go out with the boys, and he just doesn't really want to. He's, you know, been spending a lot of time with Nina, and he just doesn't really want to go, I think, to the strip club that they were gonna head to.
Yeah, Rockefeller's, I think it was.
Yes.
And this whole time, I'm thinking, Steve has really outgrown that friendship, and, like, kudos to him for trying to maintain this 25-year friendship, but at the same time, like, it is so obvious he has outgrown the friendship.
Yeah.
But he is still with Nina, which I was happy about. But he's never mentioned any of his suspicions to Nina about Dan being the Linford Strangler.
Yeah, which I don't blame him for not saying anything to her. She hasn't told him anything. Okay. At the end of this chapter, he decides he needs to tell Nina what's going on. And then I had to know, I was like, everyone in part two is talking to somebody. Everyone's talking to somebody. Which I just was like, shit.
Like, this is gonna explode.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... what a burden for them to have carried all this time without talking to anyone. So it's like, I'm glad they're finally like...
Yeah, I agree.
So then we have chapter 21 with someone named Montana. And she was a dancer at Rockefeller's, which is the strip club. And she said she had gotten off work, left the club around 1 a.m. Somebody grabbed her from behind. And Montana kind of made me laugh because she's like this Aikido expert. Mm-hmm. And so she was talking about how, you know, she was trying to figure out her best moves to get away. And
the funny part, she's like, the whole point of this ability,
Aikido,
yep, that one, was to not harm each other. And the police are like, did you scratch him? Did you bruise him? She's like, oh no, I did it all right. I didn't leave a mark. And we're like, okay, that's right. But like, that's not what we want.
Yeah, we want DNA. But so she kind of described what she could about the man. She could only see that he was a white guy with brown eyes, dressed in black with black gloves and a mask. And then he said the words to her that he was going to mark her, you fucking slut. And that he said the word slut several times during that, which was a huge indicator to the police that this was their guy.
Honestly, I was a little surprised he like said anything. In all of the like other times that we've met him, like with his victim, obviously we've never gotten past the time the victim gets knocked out. But for some reason, I was getting the impression that like he killed them and did all his stuff like while they were knocked out or dead already, kind of thing. So like for him to say all that, I was like, oh shit! Like I wasn't expecting it.
But only a couple of them have lived. So her and Sarah. So that was interesting. But I'm like, ooh, good. Maybe we're closing in on the killer. Like, and then we go to chapter 22, back with our lovely friend Tamsin.
She just annoys me.
Tamsin. So they're at work and there's talk about the girl who got away. And she starts obsessing and thinking, well, Jake supposedly has been away in Cambridge for the past week. I think he's lying. And she all of a sudden decides, I need to leave work, go to the police station. And her boss is like, you cannot leave work, you know, the police station. She's just like, no, I'm going.
Well, the boss doesn't even know why she wants to leave. She's I need to leave. And you're like, unless you give me a good reason. She's like, no, I just have to leave. And you're like, you can't leave. Like, I was like, this back and forth. I was like, oh my gosh, this is wild. But her friend Brandon runs after her because he knows what's going on. He runs after her and is trying to talk her out of this. And it's just like, you don't know what's going on. You were going to wreck this idea of this guy. And just literally is like, don't stop, you know, don't do this.
But she pretends like, okay, you're right, but I think I do need to go home. And Brandon sees right through that BS. And as soon as she leaves, he heads to talk to Jake and tell him what's happening. And at some point, I think Brandon thinks that Tamsin is unhinged. And I just wrote, yep, she is quite unhinged.
Yeah, I was like, she's having a breakdown. Like, she's just obsessing and just having a breakdown. So then in chapter 23, we're back with Maisie.
So it starts in the very beginning that Kate Brownlow told her it's time. And I'm like, oh shit, time to go to the police? Time for what? And then it kind of goes backwards. So on Thursday, Maisie went home from school and found Gary and her mom arguing. And it was because Gary said he had to go back to Charlotte's for one night. And I thought it was very smart of Maisie. She's like, okay, mom, why don't you go with Gary?
Yeah, I like that too.
Of course, he got pissed. He did not like that. So Maisie dashes outside and writes down the mileage in the car. And so he goes away, comes home. Of course, he's doing laundry, which I'm like, why is he doing laundry right away? And Gary offers to get them Chinese food because Prue's still pissed off, as she should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very sneaky of Maisie to offer to go with him so that she could look at his mileage again. And he'd only driven 38 miles, which was not enough for him to have driven to Charlotte's and back.
Yes. So she talks, or she texts Kate, And she's like, you know, don't assume the worst. Like, let's talk on Monday. You know, it's going to be okay kind of thing. And during this time, I believe Beth, she bumps into Gary and Gary gives her a ride home. And the way she talks about him, I'm just like, first of all, that's an old man.
Yeah. She's saying how sexy he is. And I'm like, oh, gosh. Maisie, get away from Bethany. Bethany is a mess. So when she's back in school, Mrs. Brownlow calls her out of class to tell her about the woman hurt on Thursday when Gary was out of town and suggests that they go to the police. And I did notice and picked up on the quote that was, I think, on the back of the book, where Mrs. Brownlow says, every killer is someone's son, someone's husband, brother, or boyfriend. And I'm like, yep. They're like, they are. And I think too many people instantly jump into the mind frame that, oh, it couldn't be this person that I know and love. But everyone, every killer has somebody that loves them.
I agree. Yeah. I thought her comment was a little, not all killers are men. Obviously, you know, this one is, but I was
most of them.
Oh, yeah, that one. But I was like, okay, well, it also could be someone's mom, sister, brother, whatever. So, but yes, very true.
So they decide to go to the police station. That's how that chapter ends.
Okay, so we are back with Juliet, chapter 24. Laura wants to go to the police, but Juliet talks her down.
And Laura's like, you know, the last two victims got away. If another one's killed, it will be your fault. And I'm thinking, well, no, like, it's no one's fault but the murderers, but okay. But Juliet thought, it's easier to be a mouse hiding in the shadows. And I thought that was a very accurate description of kind of how I picture Juliet, that she just kind of hides away and wants to not face reality.
Yeah.
And Laura's comment, if you truly think this man is capable of committing murder, what the hell are you doing still living with him? And I'm like, amen, sister. Yeah. Like, get, oh, if you truly believe this, get away.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. So the next chapter, 25, we're back with Steve. And I was kind of confused here for a minute because you're talking about, like, sleeping in the car, being in, like, a travel lodge. And I was just like, oh, I totally missed something.
Yeah. But it finally, like, they talk back through it because Steve finally shared his fears with Nina about Dan. And she, of course, wanted to go to the police. But Dan's having an internal struggle because they've been friends for 25 years. And he wanted time to think without Nina talking about it. So he said, you know, I just need a break. So he goes home and sees the article about a dancer from Rockefeller's who had been attacked the night of Woodsy's birthday outing. And then Steve called Dan, I believe.
Yes.
And kind of just starts asking him how the night went. And Dan gets ultra defensive and says, you know, he's pissed. He knows that Steve is questioning him and thinks that Nina put him up to the 20 questions. Then, so Nina's at her place, Steve's at his. The phone wakes him up and it's AJ calling him a fucking cunt and a rat, that Dan's been hauled into jail. And AJ said that they better both watch their backs, they're dead meat. And then Nina texted him and said, oh, I'm sorry. I went to the police.
I was a little upset about that.
About her going?
Yes. I mean... I think Steve was going to anyway. But... Not that I don't disagree. Dan is, you know, obviously a terrible dude. But she already didn't, like, had a skewed view of him with what happened with her friend. Which, you know, yes, that plays into it. But also, I was like, you don't know Dan. You know, it could be me saying, I think my mom killed these people. And then whoever I told is just taking it for my word and going to the police. It's the same thing of that. If the teacher taking the word of the student and going to the police, it's like, I just don't know. It wasn't her place to go to the police. I think she should have talked Steve into it, but she doesn't, she's not the one that's been knows all these things. It's a secondhand knowledge. So I feel like, I don't know. I didn't love it.
But see, I kind of can see that, because if you're coming to me and saying, I suspect my boyfriend of all this awful stuff because of X, Y, and Z, here's what's making me question it. And there's an anonymous tip line I can call. Like, you would have the internal struggle about reporting that tip to the police. Whereas Nina doesn't have that struggle because she doesn't have the friendship. So, like, I think it's different because in this case, they're going to the police, but I kind of feel like it was the right thing to do because maybe she couldn't talk Steve into doing it. And this guy's out there killing people. I don't know.
Moral dilemma there, I guess. But they decide, you know, AJ does threaten them, and so they decide they need to disappear for a little while. And so that's how that chapter ends.
Then we're back to 26, which is Dorothy, and she went to the church kind of praying and thinking about everything because she's upset about the box. It went missing from his drawer a few days after she discovered it, so she's even more worried about it. And so she's at the church and praying for guidance. And like all of a sudden, it's like she knew she had to go to the police. And I loved the end of this chapter, how it brings all the characters together, where Tamsin's at the police station, Maisie and Kate are at the police station, Laura's at the police station, Steve's saying he's glad Nina called, and Dorothy's on the bus to the police station feeling like she's heading to her own funeral. And I'm like, that's pretty cool that all of them are kind of like converging on the same place.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was really clever writing. Mm-hmm. So the next chapter is chapter 27, which is called The Charge. So it's just the detectives are going through all this stuff and they're like, okay, you need to stand up. Literally throughout this whole thing, I'm still like, who is it? Who is it? Who is it?
I know.
And they finally get through all that. And they're like, all right, Gary Dunlop, I'm charging you with the murders, of most of the people minus Angelica.
Yes.
But I wasn't expecting that one. I mean, I definitely was suspicious of him, but I was still like, there's definitely more suspicious people over here.
Yeah. Yeah. I was taken aback. Like, yes, he was on my radar and he was one of the people I was suspicious of, but not like I was more suspicious of Orlando and Dan.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, it's Gary.
Yeah. I was very surprised.
So then it goes to chapter 28, back to 1986. And this was an uncomfortable chapter to read, but it was also brilliant to give us the insight we needed into what helped make this monster.
I agree, but it was, definitely threw me back to my dark Vanessa, where I'm just like, oh, I now feel gross.
I know. So
it's about Gary when he's young. His mom gets remarried. And so now he has a stepsister. And they're 13. Let me make note. They are both 13 years old. And the way he's talking about her, like, right off the bat, like, it's just, I'm like, this is so, just because she's 13. Like,
and so is he. Like, he's thinking that way. Yeah, so he's, like, thinking she's the sexiest girl he's ever seen. And even though they're both 13, she's a year ahead of him in school. Well, Gary, of course, is hitting puberty, so his hormones are all over the place.
Doesn't have much control of his body.
No.
And
Gary's mother has spoken out several times that Violet acted like a little slut. And for him, that word just excited him.
I don't like it.
So they go to a walk, they're on vacation. They go for a walk to the lake, and Violet slips some rum in their drinks. And it doesn't sound to me like he had drank much
before. I don't think so.
Yeah. So he's a little drunk.
I would say it sounded like she put a lot in these 2 liters.
Yeah, it did.
And I was just like, I don't even think I could drink that now. Like, damn. But she, like, starts to come on to him, which was, again, gross.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was saying how she's like, oh, I've had sex with a couple other guys and all this stuff. And I'm like, you are 13. I was like, both of you, this is just not okay. So she starts to come on to him, and they're both pretty much naked. It doesn't go well, and he jumps the gun a little bit, which happens especially when you're that age.
And you're 13.
Yeah. And she just, like,
shames him.
Disliked her. Like, first of all, I disliked her for a lot of the things she did in this chapter. But I was like, what a shitty thing to do to someone. Even if it were, let's pretend it's not your stepbrother, and you're not 13. But, like, I was like, that is so horrible. Like, that she would say all these terrible things about him.
And saying she's going to tell her friends and some of his friends. And my heart broke for him, because I'm just like, how awful. Like, he's so ashamed anyway. He's drunk. So he throws up, and then he's even more embarrassed because he just threw up. He starts crying and begging her not to tell. And she's just calling him names and jumps in the lake. And he's just panicked. Like, she's going to tell all these people the stuff about me. So she starts screaming in the lake, saying she's got a cramp and she's bobbing under the water. And he's like, well, if I save her, she's going to tell all these people. If I don't, problem solved. And so he just watches her drowned. He talks about how watching her made him feel so powerful. So there's the little twisted part kicking in. And he played it all out in his mind about how to go tell his parents. And he wanted to make her look as badly as possible. So he made sure to leave all of her clothes there so that they'd know she had stripped. And he rushes off to tell his parents.
Yeah. And then he kind of, like, recaps his time since then. and just talks about a couple of the women he's killed, and it's literally for no good reason, any of them. Not that there's ever a good reason to kill somebody, but he just, his brain is like, he keeps killing Violet over and over again.
And he talks a little bit more about Charlotte and how, I mean, he was just using both of these women, Charlotte and Prue. He kept Charlotte around and kind of lingering in case he needed to get away, and that she was a pathetic sap that just accepted him, that he was in other relationships, never asked too many questions. I'm like, you're an asshole and a killer. Like,
yeah.
And then he did talk about giving Bethany the ride and how she was a little slut that had flirted with her, and how he would have killed her had she not gotten out of his car. Like,
yeah. Just a disgusting human being. Reading that whole chapter, I was just disgusted. Ugh. And angry.
Yes.
So the next part we are at, so part three, it's called The Afterwards. So this, I love that Terry gave us a wrap-up chapter for everybody. I loved it.
Me too.
So the first chapter is on Tamsin. And it's, the first part of it is just an article of an interview, with Jake, and just kind of like relaying their whole relationship, or not relationship, their whole interaction.
Ordeal.
Yeah. And there are certain things that he says that I'm like, you're such a dick. So I'm not going to say he's a great person or great man, but it comes to light during all of these things. Like, the whole time we were saying, we're like, I don't think he means it that way. And I don't think he's really that into you. Like, all of our suspicions really came true, or we saw that they were true in this.
Yeah. And I like how they kind of, how Terry wrapped this part up, like using an interview about it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a smart writing device as well. But Tamsin goes away and moves in with her parents. And she's registered with this employment agency called Extra Mile. And again, she starts her stalkery behavior.
Yeah.
With a new guy.
Oh, the whole time I'm like, okay, you have a serious problem, honey. Like, yes, she's therapy, definitely please. A serial stalker, or if that's a thing. I don't know. But yeah, she needs help.
Yes, she does. So then we go to chapter 30, and it's the wrapping up of Juliet the wife, which my notes cut off, so I might need some help here. But Juliet was happy because Paul never knew she went to the police about him.
Mm-hmm.
But she did find it weird because he had been questioned, and he just kind of let it go, and his whole demeanor kind of changed about everything. So she's like, that's weird and unlike him.
So at this point, you know, she knows she needs to like confront the situation. And so, you know, they're having a couple drinks. And she finally brings it up, and it comes out, oh God, this pissed me off, that he had been unfaithful many a times with many a women, and just the things he says to her, I feel like it finally clicks, you know, that there's nothing to talk about, not ever. It's like, not even in completely happy, healthy relationships, there's always, you know, there's always communication. And so for him to say that, it's like, okay, well then this is nothing. Like, we're nothing. And then I really liked how Laura was brought into this and mm-hmm. was like, Paul doesn't like Laura because Laura wasn't scared of him and Laura would stick up for him or to him. And Laura was here to stay. So I was like, okay, I'm glad.
Yes.
Then the big twist that Juliet was Laura.
Yeah. I was like, what? I'm like, that's pretty brilliant. So it's like this, Laura was this other part of her. Laura's her middle name. So it made me like Juliet more because I feel like maybe parts of her inner Laura did come out from time to time with Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
I thought that was a great twist. And I love that, like, it doesn't even have to do with, like, the main killer. Like, it has nothing to do. It's just a side character. Not a side character. But, I don't know. I loved this twist. It was one of my favorite
twists. Yeah, me too.
And so she, like, this was the straw. And she packed up her stuff and got an apartment and took her classes and, you know, was doing pretty well for herself.
But we did find out in between there that Paul wasn't entirely innocent. And Terry tied it back to the very opening chapter where we were meeting someone. That was one of Walter's, Dora, who had been brought to this, to another country by this guy named Walter and then basically sex trafficked. And Paul knew all this was going on and would use some of the sex workers from there. And he's a sleazeball.
He is. And the best part of all of this is he thinks he's so three steps ahead of everybody and he's so in control and everything's going to just work out perfectly for him. And it comes to light that actually the guys, you know, the criminals, you know, well, like the hard criminals that he's thinking he's pulling one over on them. They're like, oh, he thinks we're leaving, but we'll just kill him. Like, yep. They're not going anywhere. And the whole time I was like, I'm okay with this. Like,
yeah.
Like, fuck we you, Paul.
We support it.
Yeah, so I was really glad on how that chapter or that story ended up.
So then it's the wrap up with Steve in chapter 31. And he and Nina are still together and they're staying at her aunt's holiday cottage.
So I had a note that, like, I don't understand why everyone's being such a dick. Like, he gets this call from Dan and Dan's all mad about it, which I get. He accused them of being a murderer, but, like, it's not worth murdering somebody over. Like, yeah. He's like, I'm going to kill you. And it's like, so you are a murderer. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It felt very weird. Like, that him and AJ were just so over the top angry. And I'm like, again, I don't know what it's like to be accused of murder. But it's not like he was charged and went to jail for 30 years and is like,
right.
Ruined his life. Like, it's, I don't know. I don't know. I just thought it was a bit, their reactions was not on the scale.
Yeah. Over the top.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard for Steve because he is mourning the loss of a 25-year friendship, but at the same point, like, that call is what helped him and Nina move forward. They packed up their bags and left for Scotland.
Yeah.
And I think that I like their relationship and that made me happy.
Yeah, I think they are cute. So then we are on 32 with Maisie. Maisie, her mom, and her brother are staying with Kate. So I'm really glad, like, that I could see, I don't know, like, Maisie's mom maybe being like, you took my daughter to a police station and didn't call me. Like, I'm really glad, like, they got past that part of it. And, like,
yeah,
they're, you know, friends now and they're doing a lot. Or Kate's doing a lot for Prue to work through the aftermath of finding out her boyfriend was a serial killer.
Yeah, and I feel like Kate is really there for both Maisie and Prue and just is turning out to be a very solid friend to them. And, you know, Prue, I think, feels disgusted that she was in the relationship with this man, and but she's trying to work through that.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. So, like, Prue, I think a detective talked to Prue, but Prue contemplated leaving and starting over somewhere else. And, you know, their reaction was like, the people will find out there too. You know, we really can't run and hide from this.
Right.
So, like, let's not go somewhere where we're going to feel even more alone. So at least they have friends here, you know. So, and like, Saffron's mom, like, was still friends with her. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people did turn on them and was like, how could you not know? But then I do think a fair amount of people recognized that it's not their fault they didn't know.
Right. But he just did a great job and of hiding it. And, of course, Bethany tries to use it for her benefit and become famous by sharing pictures of her with the family. And, yeah.
She was annoying.
Yeah, she was. And then the last chapter, or not the last, chapter 33 is Dorothy the Mother.
I like this chapter.
Yes. I like this chapter as well. So she finally figures out, Orlando finally comes clean that he is a crossdresser, and that's why he had that box of stuff, that he just likes dressing up in women's clothing, and they go to clubs, and his friend Colin does as well. And I feel like, you know, it was hard for Dorothy. Like, I imagine her as an older lady. I don't know how old she really is.
I mean, her son is like 43.
So late 60s, probably. And, like, she just handled, I feel like she handled it the best way she could.
I absolutely agree. And I think, so when Marla and Silvana show up and they're like, you know, this is Marla and, you know, I'm Silvana and stuff like that. She kind of starts, first she's not making the connection. She's like, what are you talking about? It's you and Colin. But then she kind of like, it starts to click as the more they explain it, and her reaction, like she just starts laughing. And I was really nervous, like, they would think they, like, she was laughing at them. But, like, you can read through her thoughts, and it's like, she's laughing because she thought her son was a murderer. And that's not at all. And, like, she's like, oh, this I can handle. This is fine. Yeah. Like, I'm just grateful you're not killing people.
Exactly.
So I just thought that was really interesting. And then at the end, she's like, you know what, guys, let's get drunk. You know, this is a lot. Let's just get drunk. And I'm like, you know, I feel like that's also an appropriate response.
Yes. After all you've been through. And I did find it interesting, too, that she and Prue had connected. Mm-hmm. And that she thought that maybe they'd end up as friends. So I thought that would be kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
I like that. And there's even, like, little talks of, so Colin's dad lost his wife or was divorced or something. I think they lost his wife a few years back. And so now, like, Orlando and Colin are like, hey, he thinks you're interesting. And so and she starts to contemplate it, which I was like, that is such a good move for her. You know, she's always been so, it's just me and Orlando, and, you know, she's finally, like, kind of, like, giving herself something more. So, I don't know. I really liked it.
Yeah, I hope that that turns into something for her. Okay, so then the epilogue.
I don't like it.
The epilogue wraps back to the prologue with Dora.
Mm-hmm.
And it's someone is talking about killing Dora, and that strangling's a hard job, and he wouldn't even remember what she looked like the next day, and going through and thinking, like, he's not a fame-hungry idiot like Dunlop. Like, he just made sure to not, like, try to get fame from his killings.
Yeah.
And this whole time I'm like, who is this?
Right? I was like, are we going back in time? Like, I was like, was there a partner? Like, I was definitely confused on who it was until they mentioned AJ. And then I was like, fuck, that means it's definitely Dan. And Dan kind of gives this, the story of how this all began. And that how him and AJ kind of connected and, like, started talking about this kind of stuff. And then it comes out that Dan killed someone when he was underage. I was, like, so shocked.
I know.
And his brother just helps him clean it up. And it's like, oh, it's a total accident. I was like, I don't care if it's an accident. You still, like, do something else. Like, oh, I was, yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah, and that first kill, like, it started the craving in him to do more. And I think that Noel, however you say his name, their relationship was very strained after that. Like,
yeah, I think he knew something was different with his brother. I mean, it's hard not to look at somebody different when you know they killed somebody. Like, that's
exactly,
that's a hard thing just to look over.
That's a relationship changer.
But so I do love how this kind of, through this whole process, we hear how careful Dan is to never be the suspect. And, like, the girls don't even know that he's the one that lets him go on the nights he's going to take them. And he never leaves any DNA, you know, all these things. Or he never gives his DNA to the police. Well, Noel, I was calling him Noel. It might be Noel. I was saying Noel. Noel gets in a fist fight, and there's different laws over there about collecting DNA. But they ask to collect all of their DNA, and it comes up with either a match or a sibling match to these murders. And it's just, I love that they nailed Dan. Like, fuck you.
Yep.
And the whole time he's like, he gets brought in and he's like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. You know, I got my lawyer here. And the detective's like, we've got him. We have got him.
Yep.
And so, I was like, fuck you, Dan.
Exactly. Perfect ending to that book. Whew. That was a wild ride.
That was.
I finished that second half of the book the same day we recorded the last podcast. So that was a couple of weeks ago. Because once I started, I'm like just flipping through the pages, like needing to figure this out.
Yeah.
So what are your overall thoughts?
Overall thoughts. I absolutely love this book. I was worried with the jumping between characters that it would be really hard to follow and that it would just make the story harder to, like, keep track mm-hmm. of everything. And, yeah, in the first half, I did get a little confused on, like, who we're suspicious of. But overall, like, it was still such an easy read. Like, it was a very easy read, and I loved the little twists and the big twists. Yeah, I thought it was a very good book. What about you?
Same thing. Like, I feel like we've read several books that give multiple perspectives, and this one was the easiest for me to keep track of. Like, I feel like we had the underlying story, which was, okay, these women are being murdered, and then each person's story kind of picked up where the last mm-hmm. person's left off, which made it really easy to follow. And I loved all the little
author special chapters.
Yeah. Like where we're getting the victim's perspective or a newspaper article, or I liked all those devices used to give us bits of the story.
And I think it really helped tie together all the stories. You know, mm-hmm. it would be like, so-and-so reacted this way, so-and-so reacted this way. So, like, it was another way to tie together everyone's individual story into, you know, what the big picture was. It was very, very smart writing. I definitely liked it.
And I was proud of us. Like, okay, we were wrong on the killer, kind of. But we were right, because at one point we said, I wonder if there's two different people doing the killing. And turns out
there was. Yes.
So we were partially right.
We were right about not the big question.
Yeah.
So we didn't get the killer right, but we had all the other side stuff right. So
exactly.
I guess that's something.
who ended up being your favorite character or most relatable?
Ended up liking a lot of characters. I liked the end part of Juliet Laura. Mm-hmm. She still frustrated me in the first half of the second half of the book. I liked Kate. I liked her point of view and how she helped Maisie. And I liked Dorothy. I thought there was a few chapters, we didn't really touch on it, but, like, the way she thinks about people and, like, religion and, like, the way she reacted about Orlando. I don't know. I really liked her as a person. So, yeah, I'd say I liked a lot of characters. What about you?
I think really all of the main characters other than Tamsin, I ended up liking. But yeah, I really liked Maisie. Same ones you said, really. Like, I liked all the main characters. Yeah. And I think the most relatable for me, I could relate to different parts of all of them. Like, really.
Yeah, there wasn't like I don't know. Like, I think because we got so many points of view. Like, it's hard just to pick one that you kind of relate to. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't feel like definitely related to this person situation. So, I'm okay skipping that question. Who did you hate most?
Dan. Gary. Violet. Those are my top three, I think. Oh, AJ. AJ was the...
AJ. I also hated asshole. Paul.
Oh, yeah. Paul.
Paul was such a dick. Yeah, all of those.
Yeah. Yes, Terry did a very good job of evoking strong emotions either for or against characters. Like, I either love them or I hated them.
Which has been, I feel like, of all the books we've read, you know, that is such, we touched on all of it. We've read books where we love everybody. And then mm-hmm. you find out who the killer is. We've read books where we hate everybody, and then you find out who the killer is. And so this one was like a great mixture of, like, you love some people, you hate some people. Yeah, I like that part of it.
Okay. What about our overall wine glass rating?
Do you want to go first?
No, because you know what I'm going to say.
Well, that's true. I
didn't
know what
you're going to
say.
For me, go ahead.
I would say, I'd say a 4.5.
Okay. Wow.
I will give
Look
it
at you.
A 4.5, and I'm okay with you putting the 5 on the website.
Okay. We can do half wine glasses now, by the way. The person doing our website has figured out how to do half ones.
Okay.
But for me, I would say it's a 5-star because I was fully invested in the story. I wanted to tear through the story. Like, I did not want to stop at the halfway point. I think this was a solid book. And like you said, like, there was very clever writing styles. She did a great job of making me either connect or hate characters. So yeah, for me, it'll be a 5.
Yeah. I think overall, great book. I think it was a really good one to end on before our break.
Speaking of breaks, are we going to talk more about that next episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's still on board, obviously, because we can't even get episodes out every week.
I do have one comment to read about the second half of the book. And this was submitted by Joyce. I accused the wrong person of being the murderer again. I read through this half of the book so quickly that I missed some major points. I had to go back and reread the entire book so that I could figure out who the murderer was and why they committed the murders. I initially thought that Dan and Gary were the same person. Why not? They were both killers. They just had enough of a difference in their murder victim selection and technique that the detectives were able to figure out what was going on. Good thing. I was beginning to think that they would never get caught.
Yes, very true. I'm glad they got caught. They deserved it.
Me too. We are going to end this episode with an Unravel the Soul question. If I can find my question. Okay. Do you want me to go first or would you like to go first?
Why don't you go first?
This should be a fun one for you to answer. I thought we'd keep it lighthearted since we're both having rough times right now. What's your favorite concert you've ever been to?
See, I've thought about this often. You guys don't know this about me, but I am a live music person. My choice of music is usually a little bit heavier than people like or know. So I separate this question into parts. So there's like the best show I've ever seen, the best band I've ever seen, and like just like my favorite band that I've seen. So which it was way more than you asked. What was the wording of your actual question?
Just answer those. Do it separate, okay. Like you.
So my favorite show was Rob Zombie. Every time they come out, they have just so much theatrical stuff and giant beach balls and confetti and fire and dinosaur balloons. Like, they just have so much stuff coming out, and their stage presence, like, all of it is just really, really, really cool. Love when they put on a show. I've seen them a couple times, and every single time, it's just really, really good. My favorite concert I've been to, like, my favorite... What was my second question? My favorite...
Favorite performer, favorite con...
That's not right.
I forget.
So my favorite show, and then I guess, that's fine. I'll just do 2 because I already forgot the third question. my favorite, like, band that I've seen, that's a hard one. But there's so many good bands. It would have to be... Okay, so I have top three. It'd have to be the third time I saw Avenged Sevenfold. Because they... I was going through a really hard time. And they played my... one of my, like, favorite songs from, like, 7-10 years before. And they never play it at concerts. And it's Seize the Day. And it was just such a, like, I can still envision, like, I was in the crowd and just, like, my song is playing. Like, it was just an amazing experience. I saw, it was probably the second or third time I saw Red Hot Chili Peppers. Because that's another one that just, like, soaks me in. And it's still, like, if any of their songs come on now, like, it, like, calms me. Like, it's a very... which they're, I don't know if you guys know Red Hot Chili Peppers, but, like, some of their songs are not about calming stuff or things like that. But I don't know. It's just something about them, like, just makes me focus on, like, what's actually happening. Even if my life is in chaos, like, it really is, like, they are so calming. And so I just, when I saw them on one of the times, it was just a very, it was a great moment or show and everything. And then my last one is I saw Linkin Park. I was front row. And I want to say it was either the year before he died, the lead singer, committed suicide, and he was such a great guy. And in this show, like, he's, like, telling the security guards, because, you know, you're in, like a stampede of people, like, hey, like, get down, like, we want them to see us. Like, they were just so much about the fans. And, you know, he's a good guy, he was a good guy in, like, his life and all the things he did with his family. And it was just really hard. I was just, that one of my favorite things that I got a chance to see him and that whole band and everything. And, like, one of their last few, like, big shows.
Performances, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a lot more than you meant to ask, but...
I knew this was a loaded question when I asked it, because I'm like... this one will have a very long answer. So I knew going into it.
I used to joke. I was like, my life is like consists of like dogs, music, and construction. And two of those, the dogs and music, I could sit down and talk to you for hours about like, you like rock music? Let's talk. Like, and literally I have talked about it for hours. And at work, like, if someone brings up dogs, I'm like, dog? You want to talk about dogs? I know about dogs. So, like, if there's ever a question of either of those, I'm like, I can talk your ear off. Like, this is, like, my passion.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, that was way long of an answer. What about you, Dawn? What's your favorite?
Much shorter. I could have a longer answer, but I will go with... I saw David Bowie in concert once or twice, but there was one at the Outdoor Amphitheater, which is actually where I live, near where I live now. It's no longer in existence. But that was such a powerful performance by him. And my ex-husband and I had, like, I think second or third row seats.
Oh, wow.
And my ex-husband played guitar, so... David Bowie was his favorite, and he got an outfit that was very much in line with the type of outfits David Bowie wore when he was performing. And my ex swears, and I think I saw this too, he swears that David made eye contact with him and kind of gave a head nod because he was dressed in ultra David Bowie gear. So I'm really glad that I got to see him in concert a couple times. And then I will also say Bon Jovi.
Ugh, I'm jealous.
Got to see him in 1988. And when he was still very young and very hot. And that That concert was just so much fun. I think it was Bon Jovi and Weezer before Weezer was really, like, I think it was Weezer. Before they were a big.
I don't know. I don't know how long Weezer's been around. They've been definitely around a while, but 88 to open up for Bon Jovi. I mean, that'd be a killer concert, but I don't know.
I mean, what if it wasn't Weezer, whoever it was like the start of their career, and like them getting to open for Bon Jovi was like such a huge deal. And that was just an awesome concert. A lot of us from high school went to the concert, and it was just such a good time. So those are my top two.
I like it. I think music, just like books, is such a way for like people to feel things and like express themselves. All right. What chore do you hate doing? And what chore do you like doing?
I hate cleaning the bathrooms. I think it's disgusting when you live with guys. I hate cleaning the bathroom. And it's harder for me now, ever since I had that episode a few years ago with reacting to a medication that kind of blew out my knees. Like, it's so hard for me to get down and, like, scrub the shower floor or the bathtub.
Yeah.
So I hate cleaning the bathroom. What chore do I enjoy?
Or, like, household thing. Like,
I don't know that I enjoy any of it, but I love that moment you have, like, when everything's clean for, even if it only lasts for a minute, like, where you can just, like, sit back and look at everything and you're like, oh, moment of relaxation. Like, everything's perfect and right where it needs to be. And just for the record, I haven't had that feeling in about 5 years. I don't mind like occasionally hand washing the dishes because I feel like I can either play music through my robot devices that you hate or listen to a podcast and just kind of get lost.
Yeah, I could see that.
What about you?
I hate doing the dishes.
Really?
Yes, I have the same idea with laundry, and if it can't go in the washer, don't give it to me because I'm going to put it in the dishwasher. I don't care if it was hand inscribed. Don't leave it out then because I'm going to put it in the dishwasher. I'm not hand washing anything. And I think it was because all through college, I lived in a house with my best friend and we did not have a working dishwasher. So I had to hand wash my dishes for 5 years. And it wasn't like it was just small dishes. Because I was also scrounging for food money and would have to make these family-sized meals. So there were so many dishes. And I'd have to hand wash them all. And so I hate doing the dishes. Which is, I think, then ironic. I don't know if this counts as a chore, but I love the cooking. I love to cook. It is, like, my little piece of serenity. I was just telling my boyfriend, I'm like, I don't even want you in here. Like, I want to talk. Like, this is just a me time. You know, either put on a Netflix or just, you know, listen to music or just nothing. Like, I've really grown to love cooking.
How about you come cook for me and I'll do the dishes? Because I don't mind cooking. I hate having to cook. Like, I hate, like, if the kitchen's a mess and before I cook, I have to do the dishes and clean off the counters. And it's like the getting prepared to cook. I'm like, if somebody would just come in and take care of all that, I don't mind cooking. But like you, leave me the hell alone. I want to listen to music or a podcast. But it's the daily, I'm hungry. What are we having for dinner? I don't care. A piece of toast.
Well, and I have a rule of if you're not cooking, you can't complain. It's like, I know what you're allergic to. I know the things you don't like. But if you haven't told me you want something, I'm cooking and you're going to eat it. And
yep,
that's what it is. There's no complaining.
Yeah, you know, I was exactly that way with you guys when you were younger with your brother. I've slacked a little bit.
A little bit? A little bit. You would make him separate meals because I don't really like it.
I know. I've finally gotten to the point where he'll like come in when I'm cooking. He'll be like, "What are you cooking?" and make a face when I tell him. And I'm like, "I don't care. It's what you're eating. Like, I don't care if you don't like it. You are having this for dinner or you can starve. Doesn't matter."
Yeah, I think that's funny.
Speaking of dinner, I'm hungry. So,
just so you guys know, Dawn is hungry. So
I am very hungry. I've been in edit mode. So, like, I think today I had a piece of toast in a couple of Reese cups. So I'm starving.
Okay.
So anyway, thank you guys for listening in. We're excited next episode to bring you an interview with Terry Tyler, but this time she submitted those answers in writing, so we'll be reading the answers. But thank you so much for your patience and understanding with our delays lately.
I was going to say laziness, but delays is a lot better.
Yeah, and more accurate, I think, because I haven't felt lazy.
No.
Don't forget to check out our Patreon and consider subscribing or Ko-fi. Follow us on social media. Please submit your flash fiction for any of the words we've had, but especially our current one. Yes, facade. So get that to us
whenever.
You can be on our schedule for a while, whenever.
So thank you guys so much. So why don't you go grab that glass of wine?
And keep reading.
Bye.
Bye.